Today we speak with Whitney Elkins Hutton. Whitney is a real estate investor and who is committed to empowering busy professionals, turning their dreams into reality with savvy wealth building strategies. She is the director of investor education at passiveinvesting.com, and she's the founder of ashwealth.com. She works with both passive and active real estate investors. She tells her story about how she was, we go through several different inflection points in her career and her personal life. She was an extremely busy professional who started a side hustle in the single family residential real estate space as an investor. She and her husband built up a portfolio of about 40 rental properties after doing fix and flip investing for a while. Well, fix and flip, the fix and flip strategy, because I actually don't think it's investing. But then she pivoted in several ways. She walks through how certain family members' deaths and medical, medical challenges led her to move from being a solo entrepreneur to a business owner. She was heavily involved in this real estate investing business as an entrepreneur, and then she had to take 3 months off, and you'll have to tune in to find out why. But she really had to take a step back to deal with family challenges that many of us end up facing in real life. Also at that point, started to look more towards commercial investing. So now she's much more focused on multifamily investing and car washes and also debt funds. And we talk about our mortgage note fund, the Integrity Income Fund, and we talk about other debt funds like fix and flip funds. So this episode is great for any moms out there who want to be entrepreneurs, who are entrepreneurs, or moms who are real estate investors, anyone who's a passive investor, anyone who wants to be an active investor, anyone who's considering a career change, anyone who is considering different asset classes in real estate investing. We cover a lot of ground in this one. This was a fantastic conversation, and I know you're going to love it. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm thrilled today to have with us Whitney Elkins Hutton. Whitney, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's a Friday. The sun's shining.
One of my friends always says, the sun is shining, the birds are chirping. What else could you want, you know?
Exactly.
For the listener out there, Whitney is the director of investor education at passiveinvesting.com. She's a real estate investor, and we're going to get into some of the trials and tribulations and successes that she's had. Whitney, before we jump back into your backstory, tell the listener, who are you? What are you up to today? And what is some of the abundance that you're experiencing today?
Yeah, well, I'm currently the director of investor education here at passiveinvesting.com. I also do one-on-one coaching at ashwealth.com, centered around the financial premise in my book, Money for Tomorrow, How to Build and Protect Generational Wealth. We got to learn how to do both. Anyways, all of that really stems from, you know, my journey in investing and primarily real estate investing over the past, you know, 24 years. And my first investment, you know, I kicked off in 2002. And I'm sure we'll dive into all of that story.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is, before we jump back, what does your, you know, what does your life look like on a personal level today? What do you have a lot of control of your schedule? Do you have financial abundance? What are some of the perks that, you know, real estate investing has allowed for you?
Yeah. So, I have financial freedom. I have time choice and location independence in my life. And that's been hard fought over the past few years. So it's really been about engineering choices, choosing to kind of step into the unknown and really create and fight for what it is that I want my life to look like. And sometimes testing out theories and, you know, sometimes you think you want to travel 24/7 from the road with your husband and kid. And you're like, wait a second. No, I don't.
This is terrible. Right. Yeah, absolutely. No. And absolutely. We like to keep it real on this show. And we don't, that's one of the things I've heard, you know, that people like about the show is that we don't pretend it's all rainbows and unicorns and butterflies, but at the same time, real estate investing or other types of investing and taking ownership of your life. You use the word engineering, and that's, I mean, I think that's a something that could easily be glossed over. But that's a critical piece, is being intentional about the kind of life you want. Not that you can control everything, of course, but you can be intentional about how you want your life to look in 5, 10, 20 years. And so the fact that you have financial freedom and control of your schedule, and location independence. I mean, so many people out there would love to have just one of those. So that's phenomenal. I know you're gonna walk us through how you were able to get there, which was not easy for sure. So 2002 set the stage for us, your first investment, I believe. What did things look like for you?
Well, I bought a house with a significant other. We thought we did things a little out of order. We thought, get a house and then figure out the rest of, what our future would hold as a couple. And partnered with a realtor. The realtor gave us a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I read the first couple of chapters and I said, "Ooh, this is cool." Skimmed the rest. And I'm like, I'm ready to buy a house. Did a lot of things well, missed a few keys along the way, especially with the second house that I purchased. But with this first project, bought the house, it was a rehab. and I was bringing the money, I was the money partner. I'm the one with the stable job. I was working in public health at the time. Mind you, this is right after 9/11. So, I mean, I'm in my heyday where I'm, working through. Training doctors and public health nurses how to identify anthrax and smallpox, and I'm thinking I'm loving life, but it has me on the road 80 plus hours a week. We buy this house, relationship falls apart about a month later.
And just to be
Mind
clear,
you,
that the intention of the house, sorry to cut you off, but it was to live in, fix up and live in.
fix up and live in it, and build up some equity. So we had choices on, do we want to keep that house rented or do we want to trade up for a larger house? And quickly realized after a month of living together in these type of conditions, we were just completely two different personalities and parted ways fairly amicably. But I had the house because I fronted all of the money on the house. But I realized I didn't have the skills to complete the rehab. And it had green shag carpet, psychedelic daisies painted all over the walls.
You wanted to change that? Okay. No, I'm just
Yeah,
kidding. I'm just
right. I wasn't living in the 1960s anymore.
kidding.
But
Well, if you just wait a few decades, maybe it'll come back around, but
it will. Yeah, that's so true. But I really got scrappy. I bought the Home Depot 123 book. Started teaching myself. My dad reminded me at that time. He was like, "You know how to do things. Like, I taught you how to use power tools. You can do a lot of stuff." It was just really scary. It's one thing to put together a table, another thing to take down a wall.
Absolutely. But I think, and I don't want to gloss over that point, and I've talked on prior episodes enough, so I won't go into it about my own story and that bit of it, but just the mindset shift that it sounds like he helped you, your dad helped you work through, is just starting to point to strengths that you have and things that you have accomplished and skill sets that you do have. Was that the start of a mindset shift there?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think he was in failing health at that point in time, which kind of feeds into the journey piece of this. And so, normally, in prior years, if I hit a challenge like that, my parents would be like, dun, 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 dun. They show up. They work along with me. They would help me figure out, help me build the skills. Well, he's in the hospital now and he can't do that. But he really, which was painful for him. He wants to help his baby girl. And anyways, long story short, he was just like, "What can I do?" And he just like, "Go to Home Depot," which is his favorite store. He lived in Home Depot if he
That's
could.
funny.
And he was like, "They have free classes. They'll teach you how to do drywall. They'll teach you how to surface floors. They'll teach you how to lay tile." And I'm like, "Okay." So I'm like I have the time to do that. But I stuffed that property full of roommates, people that didn't mind living in a construction zone, that didn't mind helping out for beer, pizza, sushi, and rehab that property. And I thought I had to get rid of that property. I sold it 11 months later. Got it all beautified, sold it. And then that's really where it clicked for me. That's so we talk about the mindset piece. It's when I'm preparing my taxes post-closing, I was like, wait a second. Okay, not only did I walk away with a 52K check, I also didn't pay for any of my housing expenses during that
That's
time because
amazing.
my roommates had been covering them that.
Right.
And then I actually, my grandfather helped me with the down payment. Now, this is the wild, wild west of lending. I mean, I was 103 financed on the property. So I
Right.
don't
At that time.
suggest that to
Right.
anybody,
No.
but
If you could fog a mirror, you could get a loan.
exactly. Yeah. I had a, yeah, a heartbeat. That was about all I,
Right.
when they told me how much money they could give me on the property, I was like, wait a second, that's more than the property's worth. And they were like,
Makes no
yeah.
sense.
I'm like, that doesn't seem right.
Right.
But I'll take it.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's really where it started clicking. It also it was tax-free because of the 121 exclusion.
Okay.
I could
What can
utilize
you,
that.
yeah, what is that for the listener?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people in real estate are aware of the 1031 exchange,
Right.
meaning if they live in a property as their primary well as an or if they have an investment property and they hold
Right.
on to it and they decide to sell it after a year, they can trade it up for a similar size or a larger property and keep the gains of it tax-free
Right.
and avoid depreciation recapture.
Yes.
Well, in this case, it's my primary residence, but they had the 121 exclusion is kind of like the 1031 exchange. As long as I lived in the property for 2 years, I could keep that money tax-free. Now, somebody is smart and doing math and going, Whitney, you said 11 months. Right. There are exceptions to be able to reduce that. Say you have to move for a job or something like that. Like
Okay, like a
there are,
hardship or something like that.
yes. And it's a sliding scale.
Okay,
So
gotcha.
closer I got to that 2 years,
Yeah.
there was a whole math
So the
equation.
2 years is not a hard and fast rule. 2 years would be better, but 11 months is still good.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now get that's 2002, 2003, four,
Yeah.
like
Yeah.
timelines. Check the tax code
Right,
now for
right,
sure. But that's where I was like, wait a second. Here, I made a buku of money
Yeah.
that was not attached to my identity or my degree that I did on the nights and weekends that paid me more than what I was earning at my day job that had me traveling 8 hours a week. Oh, by the way, remember my dad's in the hospital. He's, he eventually goes into hospice. That job's not allowing me to go back and be with my father while
Right.
he's on hospice. I mean, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years. I didn't know how much time I had with him.
Right.
And that's where I was like, oh, I need a way better side hustle here that would allow me flexibility. That's
Sure.
really it was after. I didn't, the
Yeah.
word financial freedom and cash flow, they just were
Yeah.
not even in
Right.
my purview, but just flexibility.
Right. Flexibility and control, right, of your schedule a little bit. Yeah, that's okay. So, all right, so fast forward, what did the second property look like and how did things turn out from there?
Well, second property didn't go nearly as smoothly.
Okay.
I'll drop a little nugget. We can come back to it later. When I sold the property, right now we're in the middle of 2006 and seven. Not a good time for that. And a
No.
bus falls into the roof of the property. It was built into
Sorry, what'd you say?
a bus
Whoa, okay.
rolls down from my neighbor's property into the roof of the property one day after closing. So it was a total, you know
Wow.
what show.
I did hear you clearly. I just had to make sure that's what
Exactly.
you said.
But so first property goes really well. Second property, I actually make money because of the tax savings on the property, but
Okay.
it that was getting out by the skin of my teeth legally and financially. But now I've kind of figured out what I've violated, what went well in the first property that didn't go well in the second property.
Right.
Location, location, location.
Sure.
So I could do several more fix and flips. By myself, also with my husband, and we're living in them, building up equity, but now we don't have any cash flow. Like I can't
Yeah.
pay the grocery bill. I can't see how I can retire off of this or step away
Sure.
from my job.
You're
Because we
getting put
wanted to
it's right. It's potential lump sums in the future, right? But nothing reliable on a month-to-month basis.
start a family,
Right.
and that wasn't going to get us there. So
Yeah.
I got we continue to do the live and flip because we see the potential there.
Yeah.
But we're trying to figure out how to get the cash flow. So eventually I figure out, wait a second, let's put a tenant into one of these fix and flips and make it a rental. And like,
Yeah.
oh, the lights come on.
Yeah.
Yay, that, hey, we have cash flow. But
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
even know how to calculate cash flow at this point in time.
Right.
So we had a whole learning curve there. Once we kind of figured out these puzzle pieces with help of other people, coaches, mentors,
Yeah.
people in our circle, we decided to surround ourselves with people that were knowledgeable in real estate.
That's a really key point there. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I'm an epidemiologist. We know math. Like, I have a
Right.
strong biostats degree. You want me to do some like, regressions? I can do that. Like,
Right.
I can't, I mean, I couldn't calculate cash flow. I didn't know how to know the math equation. But once
Sure.
we figure these things out, doors just blow off. Like, we go from one rental to 40 rentals in a
Wow.
space of like 3 years.
That's incredible.
Some inflection points along the way. Like, we
Yeah.
first start buying turnkey, then we get into BRRRR investing, where we're
Yeah.
buying below value, rehabbing the property, pulling the same capital back out, going
Yeah.
tenanting, going buying another property.
Refinancing and repeat. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done some of those myself. So, yeah, that's what I was going to ask is, I mean, yes, true, fix and flip has certain downsides. And I actually wouldn't even necessarily consider it investing myself because it's a lot of work and it's transactional. But if you're not doing the actual flip part and you're keeping the property and you're keeping a tenant in there, yes, that does solve the income problem to some degree. But how do you go out and buy that next property? How do you go from 3 to 40 or what? I mean, so in your case, you were using different strategies. Just briefly walk through like a case study, with even fake numbers, if you would, for say one of the properties that you did a BRRRR on. And you pulled the cash out. What does that look like for the listener?
Yeah, so our first BRRRR we bought for $60,000. Bought
Okay.
it. So the first 10 properties we did were turnkey. So I'm buying them already rehabbed with a tenant in it.
Yeah.
We're running out of cash. I
Right.
go to my turnkey provider and I'm like, hey, will you teach me how to do this?
Right, right.
I'm on my last little, at this point, cry me a river. I have $100,000 left, but I only have $100,000 left and I want to continue to scale.
Right.
And my
Yeah.
first time properties haven't baked long enough for me to pull equity out of them.
Sure. Right.
So he was like, great. He goes, here's one that I is too small for me to do. I'm like,
Okay.
perfect. Give
Yeah, it
it to
didn't fit his buy box, right?
me. Didn't fit his buy box. So $60,000 purchase, 10K goes into it. The property after we rehab it would be worth $110,000.
Wow. And
Okay.
that's largely because you bought it at a discount, but and then you forced appreciation with the rehab, right?
Yeah,
Okay.
we cleaned it up. We put in new. I mean, it was probably. I think it was off a probate sale, so we just cleaned it up. Did a little bit of paint, carpet, and a couple bedrooms.
Yeah.
Replaced a couple of appliances. Not very much. But it pushed the value
Right.
To 110,000,
Yeah.
and
Wow.
you could put a tenant in there for just under $1,000 a month. And so
I mean,
now,
yeah,
yeah.
that's great.
So we pulled all of our money back out
Right.
and then did it again. And then we got to the point where we were able to get one or two property or two properties going at the same time, one under my name, one under my husband's name. And so we get this little flywheel going.
Yeah.
And then my mom dies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, and
Wow.
then my husband breaks his neck
Whoa.
in the same week. So couldn't they actually happened in reverse order, but anyways, yeah, you want to talk about that. That was the indication to me. That was the next inflection point that doing these fix and flips are great, or BRRRRs,
Yeah, right.
personal property and portfolio are amazing, but I
Right.
need to go bigger. I'm playing too small.
Of a game, yeah. And at this point, were you still working your day job 80 hours a week?
Yep, we have now at
Wow.
this point in time, we have a 4-year-old at home.
Wow.
I was still working 80 hours a week. I
Yeah.
was now, still in public health, but working closer to like
Working
40, 45.
more
But
reasonable and you're
4-year-old
like
at home.
so just
Yeah.
a full-time job, not a double a full-time job.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, you stack a 4-year-old, only
Yeah.
child on top of that.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And, my husband, he had a mountain biking accident. He's fine, guys.
Wow.
But yeah, he did break his neck. It was touch and go for
That's super scary.
super scary, super scary. And then my mom, we were working through our stuff together. So, and then finding out that she passed away like in there, at
Wow.
home. And then having to deal with all of that, it was just
Yeah.
crazy.
And what year was this?
2018.
Okay. So, and then yeah, that's a lot of health and just, just a lot of that's a lot. Just a lot of adversity for sure within the family. So, and 2018, so at that point, what did your portfolio look like?
So at that point in time, we have about 37, 38 properties.
And those are all rentals.
All rentals. We were cash flowing, I would say, probably like $10,000 to $12,000 a month. But it didn't feel stable there because with single family rentals,
Yeah.
you're 100% occupied or you're paying the bills,
True.
right? So we have, people, things just weren't stabilized yet.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I need to go bigger, right? But the
Right.
cool thing was that happened at that period is I made that transition from a solopreneur to a business owner because I went, you know what? I'm dealing with two burning fires in my life right now, and I got to hold it together for my kiddo.
Right.
I honestly just told my team, I'm like, don't call me, I'll call you.
Wow. Yeah. Sometimes you
Here
got to
we
do
are.
that.
I got everybody lined out within like a 3-day time period. And I'm like, I'm out for 3 months,
Wow.
maybe longer, in order
Sure.
to build this estate. And it was not that I had to do it that way,
Yeah.
but that for me, emotionally, I
Sure.
had to do it that way.
Understood. So did when you were a solo entrepreneur, did you have you had sounds like you had a team in place, but you were extremely active in the business. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
was the one finding all the deals, putting together all the construction budget, the lending, it was
Right.
very hands-on in
Sure.
everything. But I needed to put myself in a place where I actually had systems, SOPs, and instead of spending, 3 or 4 hours a week on these projects, I needed to be able to get away with like a 20-minute conversation.
Wow. And so you had someone that could handle what you were doing there. I mean, already on your team, I guess.
Yep, I already
Okay.
had my property manager at the time was very instrumental in that. So,
Nice.
and I had two property managers honestly, but I had a conversation with both of them, and I'm like, you're essentially my COO. So,
Nice.
and I compensated them a little bit more for that,
Sure. Right.
so to align the expectations and incentives.
Yeah.
That
That's
also
good.
gave me the space to, as I'm going through settling this estate and my mom's estate. What do I really want to do? Is this
Yeah. Well,
what I want to do? No, it wasn't.
right. And I think that's a key point, and it's like, and that's one of the things we do talk about, we've talked about before, is just no, you're not looking for that adversity. You didn't want either of those two terrible things to happen in the same week, right? Of course. But good things do come out of bad things. So opportunities come out of challenges. And a lot of times, the space is what you don't have to make those strategic decisions because you're not looking at the big picture. And I just know from experience it, family challenges and things can really kind of put everything on hold. And that's can be super difficult for sure. But it does often create that space of, like you said, what do I want and how do I get there? How do I be intentional about this? So for you, what did that, it sounds like not only going from active to more having a more passive role as a business owner, but also maybe pivoting as far as asset classes in real estate, right?
Well, I would say I took more of a glide path into the
Okay.
passive side of things
Okay.
because I knew I wanted to get into the larger commercial deals. I just didn't
Yeah.
know how. And I kept myself distracted with the single family rentals because I needed to hit an income number. That's what I was telling myself. What, how many times have you, we've all told ourselves, when I hit X, then I will allow myself to do Y.
All the time.
And instead of, right? Such the worst way of going about things. And
Such an
I know
easy
that
trap to
now.
fall into. What's that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know that now, right? Now it's, I sit and be like, no, I want Y. Let's reverse engineer. How do I get Y? I may still have to do X in order to get Y. But it instead of, it might just be for a shorter amount of time or like three, four deals to build up the equity. And then, so I just didn't know what Y was. I thought that I wanted to be the operator, right? The larger scale operator. I thought I wanted, but again, I think I was still trapped in my own identity. This go get it identity. We were talking before the show, like my mom was an amazing feminist, and some of that backfired a little bit. I never asked for help. I feel like I had to do it all myself. Like, why invest in somebody else's deals? No, I should put together the deal. It should be mine, right?
And just quickly, I was mentioning before the show when you said that that I think just like many things, many different at many times in life or many things in life, neither end of the spectrum is really great. Neither extreme is optimal. So, someone who's just not willing to take any action, not willing to have, maybe they don't have any ego at all. They're just like they ask for help immediately, and they don't show that they're willing to take any action or get results on their own. That's not good either, because who's going to want to help that person? I mean, you need to be able to roll up your sleeves at some point and do some work and be resourceful. But the other end of the spectrum is not great either, where you're just a one man show, so to speak, one person show, and you're not willing to ask for help. Because I do believe real estate investing and life in general is a team sport. We all need to do our part and work hard and take ownership of our lives, but at the same time, we're here to work together and collaborate, and you can get with that synergy much better results. So so speak to that, and how did that work for you?
Yeah, so I'm sitting here trying to kind of like dream into the. I still didn't have a framework or a methodology to work from. So I'm like, I think I want to be an operator. I think I want to be a passive investor. You know, I invested in two deals in my self-directed IRA account, which I was like, this is amazing. I'm getting paid and I'm doing nothing. It's not as much as I could do if I were running the deal. So I saw the value. So I was like, okay, why not do both? Let's do both. My husband, of
Absolutely.
course, was like, you're nuts. And I'm like, yep, I probably am. So, but I didn't know how to get into the active side of general partnership on commercial building. So I put myself in the room at a conference. I bought a ticket to a conference. I was probably one of 10 women there. So the women's bathroom line was incredibly short. We all knew each other very well by the end of the conference.
That's funny.
So but it was amazing. I met my two partners, the now former partners there, and I stepped into a role with their firm and helped them grow. They're a private equity firm and became the general partner on 10 deals. And I loved what I was doing, but I didn't see the longevity of it, you know. So I'm doing that as well as passively investing. And I was like, now I come to the struggle, you know, what is, when's enough enough, right? I've built up the income, I've built up the equity, but I'm looking at, I still haven't figured out what do I want? And the what do I want was the time, the choice to my family. Well, guess what happens in 2020? The world shuts down.
Absolutely.
And you're like, here you go. Which I, as an epidemiologist, I was just totally fascinated by what was happening around me, you know, clinically, you know, science-wise. But at the same time, I'm like, I wanted more time with my family. Here you go. You got
Careful
it.
what you ask for. No.
Exactly.
All right, so
Yeah.
for the listener, How what would you say is a piece of what's a piece of advice as far as trying to figure out what they want? I mean, it's going to be a different answer for everyone, probably to some degree, but how do you go about figuring out what it is that you do want?
Yeah, so I am a big follower of the One Thing,
Love
Gary
that.
Keller and Jay Papasan. And I go to their goal setting retreat every year, and one of the
Nice.
exercises is always setting that vision. And they really push you. They say think 10 to 20 years out. And I'm like, "What?"
Right.
The first time I did it, I could get to 10 years. My husband could only get to 2. So he was like, I don't like this.
Right.
He was like, I'm a now person. I'm like,
Right.
no.
Trying to figure out what's for dinner tonight, you know?
Exactly. So, but the more you kind of flex that muscle, the easier it becomes. And so the beauty of it is that even if you create a vision of what you want your life to look like at 10 years, you get to change it. You're not married to it, but it gives you some sort of direction, right? Because anything you do, when you start backing up the timeline, say, let's create life. Let's step into that 10 years from now. What are you doing for your day job? Or are you working a day job? Are you an investor? How are you creating impact in the world? Where are the kids? Where's the dog? Do you have a new dog? Like, where are you living? When we step into that life, now we can start working backwards to what needs to happen by 5 years to be on track to 10. Then we can work backwards from 5 years, what needs to happen by the end of the year, this year, to be on track for 5 years. And then we can focus on this year.
Which is now your husband's back on board again.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah.
I
And
can do
that's the
that.
thing. Usually there's one in a part couple or a partnership, there's one person that's the visionary and that
More
other
the
person.
dreamer, the not just dreamer in a bad way, but dreamer, like big picture visionary, like you said.
Yeah. And then one person who's more of like, the operations
More of the
person.
tactical person.
Yeah. So, but if you can kind of cohesively get to the vision part, and then work it back to that 1 year, now, like you said, I could get my husband on board for 1 year. I could just be like, okay, this year we're doing X, Y, and Z. And he's like, I gotcha.
No, I love that. I was in the military. One of the things they drilled into us was backwards planning or reverse engineering, basically. But as far as a timeline goes, now you can actually set some fairly strict deadlines that you need to hit because, we don't know really what 10 years is going to look like, but we can set some deadlines that are realistic and important for the next month or two and year, and then go from there. And then like you said, you can pivot and adjust and every year redo your 10-year vision. So I love that. And then kind of just walk us through from 2020 through today. What did your professional career look like?
Yeah, so I made a pretty hard pivot there. We're in COVID. I'm sitting here traveling with my family, but also growing this private equity firm and wrestling with all the challenges COVID was, handing us with our multifamily portfolio. We also had hurricanes, power grid goes down in Texas where a lot of our assets were. And that's where I kind of was like, is this what I want to do or is it something else? And I really liked what I 90% of my job, it was the 10% that I needed to let go. And I really loved talking to the investor, educating them, helping them create the plan, helping them, create those mindset shifts, all of that. That's what I really love doing. The day-to-day, like asset management, investor services, while I was good at this, it was a strength of mine. It was not a passion of mine. And I think that what I had to continue letting go, like my first let go was, letting go of the fact that I went to school to be in public health, right? That was my identity. Okay, I need to unhook that. Now I need to let go that my strengths were attached to my identity, so I could step into what I love doing, what was my power.
Yeah, that's really key. We've had some guests on who the primary theme of the episode was identity, getting rid of like just being too attached to your identity, basically, and being vulnerable and open to kind of redefining what that is. And what do you do at that point? And then to your other point about strengths versus passion, I often talk about, is it, especially for a younger person choosing a career, should I lean into what I'm good at, or should I lean into what I'm passionate about, or should I lean into what the market will pay me for, what people actually want? And, if you can get two of those three, then that's great. But I think when you're younger and you haven't built up the financial resources, you probably are going to have to do things that you're good at that you're not passionate about. But as you have developed more financial freedom and control of your situation, you've been able, you, it sounds like you were able to let go of a lot of those things that you were good at, but you didn't like doing, right?
Yeah, it, I guess I would stack on that a little bit further. Like, if you're creating that diagram, right? Diagram, like, is there something in the middle to where that you have a strong skill at, you're passionate about, and you get paid for?
Yeah,
Like,
absolutely.
how can you drive towards that and make
Sure.
that, even 40, 50% of your day? Because if you
Yeah.
can't, then all the other things, the admin type stuff doesn't feel
Is important.
as as painful to
Oh,
do.
gotcha. Got
Like
it. Yeah,
you're kind of,
absolutely.
but I think what a lot of people do, what I see, is they lean into what am I good at and what will pay really, really well. And then they're trying to, they get five, I work with a lot of physicians and they love caring for people, but they don't want a system.
Yeah, I can
Right.
understand that.
So I, work with them on their investing, and then that allows them to kind of back up the boat a
Yeah.
little bit, back up the car, and really kind of pick up that third piece, which was their passion.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Okay, so we're running out of time here. I've got some questions for you. So right now, before we get to the questions, what do things look like for you right now, professionally, and for the people you're serving?
Yeah, so again, just continuing my work with passiveinvesting.com, educating the investor on how to transition their active income and savings into long-term passive income and wealth. That's my jam. That's what I love doing, showing investors how to do that.
Nice. And you work, you've done like car wash investments, multifamily. What other types of asset classes?
Yeah, so to one more asset class on top of that would be real estate debt funds.
Okay, nice. Fantastic. Yeah, we have a mortgage note fund, which is technically a debt fund. A lot of times debt funds are more like fix and flip commercial loans. Do you see any kind of hiccups in the multifamily space specifically in the coming few years with the short-term debt maturing or anything like that?
Well, I mean, more hiccups than what we've already experienced.
Well, I don't know. Some people are
Yeah.
saying that 2026 could be still a rough year with for some of these loans coming due. Not saying for everyone or across the board at all. And real estate is absolutely local for sure.
I think
Just
until those bridge loans are repositioned, you're going to continue to see the kind of pain happen there. And we need to continue to monitor what's happening with like the 10-year treasury, inflation, jobs market, because we're starting to see a real economic slowdown. And until that kind of like, that ship gets right, we're pointed in a better direction, we're going to see continued pain in that space. And It, let's say, let's pretend like by the end of the year, all that kind of turned around. That just allows the operators that are still struggling with those bridge debt probably to recover some of their capital a little bit faster. But we're seeing a real drag in that arena. And I think banks are getting to the point where they're not really playing the extend and pretend game longer. So
Yeah,
yeah, it will continue, but not, I think the glut largely has happened.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, and it sounds like you've got your hands in several different types of asset classes, so you can pivot and, because that's the thing. We don't know what the market is going to do, really, but sounds like you and your investors can pivot to something that makes more sense. If multifamily doesn't make sense at that time, You got other asset classes to pivot to. So I love that. And do you still have your single family rentals, by the way?
No, I sold a large portion of the single
Okay.
family rentals and
Gotcha.
repositioned them into
Got it.
multifamily
Okay.
in like 2017, 18.
Got it.
So I was able to kind of cash out on a high note.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, you ready for some rapid fire questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Whitney, what is one thing that p people misunderstand about you?
Ooh, I would say like I think people, and this is why I love my husband so much. A lot of people mistake like my drive as being, and the speed at which I can move as not caring sometimes, right?
Gotcha.
And that's just totally not the case.
Right.
I'm processing five
Yeah.
steps ahead, and I'm like, let's jump to here. Let's
Right.
get to
Yeah, I
the
get like
solution.
that. I get very task oriented and, kind of mission,
Yeah.
like just results focused. And then it's like, all right, let's, where are we? If you, what was one of your biggest failures looking back, or, apparent failures, and what did you learn from that?
Oh gosh, we're gonna go parent failures.
No. A parent. Like a parent,
Oh.
like, I mean, there's plenty of parenting failures that I'm sure you and I can both talk about, but
Yeah. I think something that I've been just trying, my parents did what the best they could with the tools that they had.
yeah.
And it's my job to level up those tools. So I don't consider them failures, but moreover like lessons and learning. For me, I learned that my child will probably have a better, a more stable life if I'm around more, not traveling like,
Sure.
all the time, weeks at a time for work.
Right.
More emotionally available and connected, and moving from more. I mean, I grew up in a time where corporal punishment was like nobody questioned it.
Right.
We really have taken a different approach with our child.
Gotcha. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
I would put the book Cashflow Quadrant in their hand.
Yeah, I love that. I like that better than Rich Dad Poor Dad personally,
Right. I mean,
but
so people say, I feel like we're kind of like kin. Like we
yeah.
like the math part of it. Like
Right.
give me the plan,
I
not
need
the
something
story.
to latch on to,
Yeah. So
but
I would give them that book to help them understand, how money actually works, and if you want to have certain freedoms in life, this is how you need to start orienting your income in order
Yeah.
to have those freedoms.
Love that. Speaking of money, if you were given $10 million tomorrow with no strings attached, what would you do with
I would go invest it.
it?
Make more.
Nice. If you could
Yeah.
have coffee with any historical figure, or a drink with any historical figure, whom would you choose?
I know you said rapid fire. I
It
don't
doesn't
know.
have to be
Einstein.
Einstein.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a great one.
I read the book Driving Driving I was it Driving Mr. Albert.
Okay. I haven't read that.
It's about the scientist who went and retrieved Albert Einstein's brain and drove it
Wow.
back across the country to do
Wow.
studies on it. It's fascinating. You got to read it.
Well, you normally ask for a book recommendation, but we've talked about at least four already. So, what is a challenge that you're facing in your investing in your or your business right now?
I think the biggest challenge for me is trying to line up, which I really try to train my investors not to do, like line up where we are in the market with the opportunity that's in front of them. So I am continuing to remain disciplined in
Yeah.
that regard to be like, nope, stick to the plan. Don't
Sure.
look like these home run deals, like just
Right.
invest.
No, that makes total sense. What is a controversial or unconventional strategy that you've employed in your real estate business?
So, if any the the last 3 years of anything have told me or have taught me that as an investor, especially a passive investor, I need to have liquidity and predictable cash flow coming in. So I've added a huge debt layer to my portfolio. One, multiple different funds, but layered with, I can I get my capital back? Can I, monthly cash flow? because that would counterbalance my equity deals and actually give me permission to go into bigger equity deals and take a little bit more
Yeah.
risk.
And for the less experienced investor, just to be clear, you're talking about investing in debt, maybe a debt fund like we talked about. Not that you're taking on the debt as the borrower, but although you have money in equity deals, but you also are now investing into debt funds and debt deals where you're actually buying part of that debt, right?
Exactly.
Got it. Yeah, one of our the some of the perks of our fund, we have a 12-month redemption period, so it's pretty short compared to some other funds. I highly recommend debt funds in general, and one of the biggest things I can say is check out the operator and their track record. There are a lot of good debt funds out there, so I think that makes a lot of sense. You talked briefly about, I think both, at least before we started recording, possibly after we hit record, but believing in yourself. Talk a little bit more about that, just like for the listener who may not be, should they push, where should they push the boundary? What should they lean on? How do you really lean into that believing in yourself thing?
It's like any muscle. It has to be developed. And you can read books, you can listen to podcasts, but really you have to get down to brass tacks and create like little mini experiments. My daughter, she broke her ankle in July, and she's a well, I mean, a national level climber, but she's trying to get back into bouldering, which requires her to have to be able to take falls. And so right now she's just, out of her, week or two out of her boot. And I'm like, let's take one hop. Let go. Right. Okay, great. Let's do two hops. How did that go? Right.
I like that.
And then we finally hit a threshold where she was like, oh, I don't want to do any more hops. And I'm like, okay, great. Let's do this for 3 days. And then we'll reevaluate. I feel like that's kind of the same approach that I take with anything that I'm like feeling really nervous about. Like, let's break it down to the insanely smallest piece. Let's just do one of those things a day.
And then you build reps, and then you build competency, and then you build confidence, which gets to believing in yourself. So, love that. What's one question that you wish I'd asked, but I haven't? Anything you want to cover before we wrap
Gosh.
up?
I think we covered quite a bit. I mean, I think if I were listening to this episode, I'd be like sitting here like, tell me more about the debt funds that you're in. I mean, one of my favorite I like fix and flip debt funds because the borrower is not sensitive to
Yeah,
pricing.
it's true.
And so, and they're shorter durations.
They
So
are.
like 4, 6, 9 months, especially if you stay in the residential real estate space. So that's kind of, my fave. If people want to like learn more about what we do with like real estate debt, you can reach out to me directly. I'm sure the contact will be in the show notes. But
Absolutely.
also like I would, I have other debt funds that I like as well.
Nice. Yeah, and we have bought some of a few. It's a very small part of our portfolio in our fund. We've bought some fix and flip loans, and there are pros and cons to both. But I like what you listed. It makes total sense. It's a limited time exposure, to the note itself. And then, yeah, like you said, and you can usually get, if you have to go through foreclosure as the operator, we're not talking about the passive investor, but it's usually a much faster, cleaner process. And yeah, you're not evicting people out of their homes. You're dealing with an investment on all sides, so dealing with investors. So there are a lot of perks to that type of debt fund for sure. Whitney, where can our listeners find you online?
Absolutely. You can find me at passiveinvestingwithwhitney.com.
Fantastic. Any parting words of wisdom before we sign off?
If you need help, reach out, to the person that is in your circle that's doing what you do and ask for it, right? Like,
Love that. Love
yeah.
that. And you said you do mentorship for people as well as so you work with some active investors as well as passive investors, right?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Fantastic. I do as well. So, yeah, this is great. We're in similar but slightly different niches and doing similar things. So I love it. Whitney Elkins Hutton, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fantastic.
No, thank you so much for having me on, Jamie. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. And to the listener, thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Hey everyone, this is Jamie Bateman. Real quickly, I wanted to share with you something that's been pivotal in the growth and success of my businesses, and that is my partnership with Haven Financial Services. I've been working with Haven for over a year now. Christine Valdez was on episode 70 of this podcast, so go check that out if you want to hear her story. It was a fantastic personal story for sure, but Haven has been awesome. They provide me with monthly reports that are super clear and discernible, and that provides me with clarity and focus so that I can do what I do best, which is running my businesses, not preparing financial reports. Again, if you're in the market for a top-notch financial service company, or if you just want to check one out, go to www.jamiebateman/haven and check out Haven Financial Services. Again, that's jamiebateman/haven. Can't recommend them enough. Christine and her team have been fantastic. So I definitely recommend you check out Haven Financial Services at www.jamiebateman/haven. Let's get back to the show.